Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back to Nights and Jacks. I'm Finale, Mr. Matt Weber. A couple minutes late here this morning, Mr. Kevin O'Neill calling in from, are you in Indiana or are you in Michigan right at the moment?
I am sitting in Michigan.
Sitting in Michigan. It's a good spot to be. So, SP futures up 12, Dow futures up 123.
It's a beautiful morning here. I assume it's a beautiful morning in Michigan, too.
I'll let you know after we take our bottom-of-the-hour commercial break, because that's when I take the dog out.
You can't tell in the dark, man. Too much.
Well, I'm just saying, it feels like it's like in the 40s this morning. It felt very, very nice.
It is. It's actually supposed to be colder tomorrow. But,
you know. So that bottom-of-the-hour break is enough time for me to take out the dog and then feed her and then fill a coffee cup and be back here while Matt does traffic, weather, and sports.
Were you slogged through the snow when he says it's not accumulating?
It didn't accumulate, by the way.
All right.
Did you? I was hoping for a little redemption yesterday, but I didn't get it.
Well, it unaccumulated. It melted.
Well, it couldn't have melted. It was 20 degrees all day.
Well, it was gone.
There was no snow.
Just saying, the poor dogs in the dog park down there were slogging through it. So, I have to, you mavens, my question is, by the way, I got a very nice email yesterday, one of our good buddies, and he was giving me a compliment, I think. It is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. We could use a little more of that in the world, don't you think?
Yes.
I think that's kind of a good phrasing, too.
I was in one of the Star Trek episodes, Spock said something similar, but a little more negative, when they had this guy in there on some planet, and this guy's kind of a hippie sort of dude back in the days when they had hippies, and so he's appealing to Captain Kirk, then he says to Spock, he goes, hey, you agree with me? And Spock goes, no, I said I understood, I never said I agreed. There's a difference.
Yep.
But I think you have an obligation sometime to understand.
And I think so.
I think we're losing it. And I have to ask you two mavens a question. Did Jed make more in the house than he did on the oil?
Oh, let's see. Depends. When did he sell it? Let's.
Yesterday.
Let's put a timeline together here.
Yesterday, $150 million bucks. Highest.
Okay, you're gonna have to explain. I thought you're talking about Jed, like shooting at some crude, Jed.
Yeah, the house that was featured in the Beverly Hillbillies went yesterday in California at the highest price ever for a home, $150 million bucks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? I don't remember how much money he had,
I don't either.
When he became a millionaire.
Well,
he moved away from there.
Yeah. Loaded up the truck and he moved to Beverly, right? The
Black gold and Texas tea?
Yeah. But I still think as a young male, seeing Ellie Mae walk up the stairs in those tight jeans was always good. Just saying.
Ellie Mae, is she alive still?
I think she is. She has a place where she has her critters. She has like a bunch of animals and stuff. I think
she really was a critter person, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think I think even what's his name's dead, Max Bear, Jethro. I think Ellie Mae's still alive. What was her name? Oh God, I remember all the rest
of my. Shoot, this is why God created IMDb.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it was Max Bear was Jethro, and Irene Ryan was Granny, right?
Yeah, no, I think that was Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz. Unbelievable. So,
Lou Holtz and Granny Clampett were dead ringers for each other.
Oh, God, no kidding. That's, God, I can't remember. I don't know. I'll remember. You'll get it. You'll get it before I will. But anyway,
Donna Douglas was her name.
Donna Douglas, and one of the, I don't know who I like better, her or the lady at F Troop, Wrangler Jane.
I am struggling to remember the F Troop woman's name. I know who you're talking about, but I don't remember her name exactly. I'm trying to get a picture in my mind.
Donna Douglas passed away in 2015.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at the age of 82. You and I are probably on the same page.
Wow.
Which is why, you know, IMDb having pulled it up so recently gave me a quick response.
Yesterday was one of the oddest days. We're sitting here, we're down a little bit, and all of a sudden we flash, you know, like 35 points. Of course, you're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And then 5 minutes later, you hear Trump tweeted something out, and the first thing that pops into my mind is, okay, who got ahead of that one? So then that happens, then we've got there's going to be a deal. Nobody has any idea what the deal is. Nobody knows what phase one is. So you got to stream.
Actually, I saw a short summary of it, and I'm trying to remember there were like four components.
Yeah, I just heard those today. But I mean, yesterday when it first came out, you know, it had been kind of in the wind for a while. But it's a very basic sort of thing. I think it has to do with
they're calling it phase one, and it's, you know, let's call it progress. Because progress is, you know, ending this stuff. So a step in that direction, I think, is a good thing.
I think it is, too, because I'm tired of it. I still don't understand the entire mechanism. I mean, we're down to they're going to buy more agricultural stuff. That was never a problem, them buying the agricultural stuff, as I recall.
Yeah, there was also access to financial markets.
Which is undefined.
There is something that they're trying to put in place that gives the ability to monitor and have punitive measures for corporate espionage. It's not nothing. We'll see how it works out. It may not have any teeth.
One never knows. Doing, as our friend Willie Townsend used to say. I just wonder if we'd have stayed in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we're not in. So now we have a Phase One agreement with one place, and everybody pressured them together. I don't know that we wouldn't be in the same place with everybody on board, Kevin. We'll never know. But I mean, this would not have been my strategy. Let's put it that way. No, that doesn't mean this isn't the better one.
That's fine.
But I'm just. I don't understand where this whole thing, Kevin. The more I talk about it, the more people send stuff in, and thank you for that. The more I see what's going on with the China stuff. Matter of fact, I was being excoriated yesterday a little bit about not talking about the Chinese company that is assembling CTA rail cars on the southeast side. By the way, I talked about that like 2 years ago when they opened, but that's another story.
People thought you lost your railroad edge a little bit by being the first to bring that up.
Now my question is, why do we need a Chinese company to do this? now, my question is, why are they here under a different set of rules than we had going over there? I don't understand. This is not a Trump complaint at all, because he wasn't here when this happened. What has been since day one, Kevin, the ability for those guys to buy stuff here when we couldn't buy stuff there? Why was it ever like that? And why, I mean, I agree with Trump, but is it because the people here want to be able to sell to him when they pay too much? You know, to the old farts that are in his administration, the Rosses of the world, do they want to be able to sell out at an unreal price to the Chinese and then turn around and tell you they shouldn't be here? I mean, I don't understand the lack of consistency of the last 40 years in dealing with these people. And again, this has nothing to do with Trump. He wasn't here.
Yeah, you don't get the lack of consistency out of the political world.
But I mean, but then all of a sudden we turn around.
It's a given.
Well, but then you turn around and say this is an outrage. Oh, okay. Whose idea was it, you idiots? I mean, this is going to be awful to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm on a roll here. Have you read this stuff about the super rats in New York?
From time to time, but if there's something new,
there's something new.
No,
they actually have a science, whatever it means, a scientific study. They decided, Manny, did we mention this like 4 or 5 years ago? Where they decided to have an all-out war on rats. They're going to come at them from every angle.
And the problem was, is they were actually too successful.
Yeah.
At this war.
Good.
Well, I was just saying, in New York, to Chief's point, they decided, you know, the rat problem has gotten out of control. We are going to use all means necessary. Everyone's going to work together, and we're going to get rid of rats in New York City. And it kind of worked. They got rid of something like, you know, 90% of all of the rats in New York. Well, the problem is that the 5 or 10 or 12% of the rats that remained became immune to all of the rat traps and rodent.
Yeah, the ones that adapted and survived.
Exactly.
Are now super rats? Yeah. Is that what's going on?
That's exactly right. The rats that survived and were able to withstand all of the poison and the traps and everything else, and they breed at such a fast rate.
Yeah, they breed faster, too.
It became like these super rats that are now immune to everything, and they're breeding at this crazy rate, and they're like stronger and even harder to get rid of. And the rat problem basically just came right back. Like and it's worse than ever. It's crazy.
Well, they only got stronger. Sentient. We're screwed.
Well, I was thinking that the same thing happens with politicians. Just the same.
No, I thought we were talking about politicians. We're talking about real rats?
Yeah, we're talking about real rats. You know, it's a... You know, it, talk about if you ever had a problem in your house, or as my man Ike the Exorcist mentioned, if you ever have an infestation in your place... I buy this house in Beverly with this wacky couple. This is years ago. And I go to do my walkthrough, and I see this roach crawling up the wall in the kitchen. I'm thinking, no roach could possibly have ever lived for a second in my mother's place. I mean, if ever everybody had a roach, it was always somebody else's roaches. They were never yours, because your place was, you know, Southside Women, the place was so spotless, and the thought of a bug being in there. So I immediately call this guy, and he comes over. Well, I tried to, who's really had the big exterminator? They want this huge, you know, this huge contract, right? Which I didn't want to do. I just wanted to get rid of the roaches. So I get this guy from, Inglewood, nicest guy. The deepest baritone voice comes over. Yes, you definitely have an infestation. I just get rid of it. So, anyway, he looks under the cupboard in the kitchen, and he sees all these, you know, Raid and like four different brands, and he goes, "Oh, that's not good." And I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Every one of these things has like small amounts of two or three different poisons. So if you have like four different brands, you've got like..." He goes, "You should never do that." He goes, we don't... He said, "If I come this week and I spray, there'll be one, you know, one poison. And if I come back next week, if there's a few left, it'll be another totally different poison. Last thing you do is put small amounts of different stuff down there, because all you do is make them stronger," which is essentially what happened in New York, I guess, right?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So anyway, yesterday, this all happens, and then the interesting part is the VIX is actually up. The market with the spoos were up 35. At one point, they got down to only up 8, and they finished up like 20, and now they're up 12. So the celebration is very muted, which is really kind of strange. So yesterday you had, this is what happened. You had the British people going to vote. I think people thought this guy was going to win, which is probably positive. Maybe not. I don't know. Then we have the budget deal was yesterday, which totally got lost in the rest of this mess. And we have this thing, which, like you say, Kevin, is a, considering what we've been going through for the last year and a half, I think it's very positive. But whether or not it was all baked in the cookie already, and now maybe whatever they did is less than people thought they were going to do, or the same amount, do we really need to celebrate from here? I don't know. Then you have the Fed coming out and saying, by the way, no matter what we do, no matter if inflation rears its ugly head and slaps us right in the face, we're still not going to raise rates. I think the celebratory number, I'm stunned we weren't a lot higher, to be honest with you. But we weren't. Now we're up this morning some. But this
maybe
is...
Maybe it's been baked in for so long because there's so much inside information in the market that, you know, who knows what was already known.
Well, I think you're on the same page as me on that. With are you surprised at how much Boris Johnson won by?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I had somebody say, you know, when are we going to learn, you know, we're going to have to learn in this country that, you know, that going far left is not going to defeat a populist. And my reaction to that was, yeah, we're going to learn that, aren't we?
Well, we'll see. It's a different, I don't know how I compare the two. Johnson and Trump, but well, we'll see.
Yes, sort of can, but I wouldn't get too, you know, I wouldn't get too comparative on it.
I just
we're different countries, different political philosophies. You know, it's I wouldn't read anything into it related to the 2020 elections here.
I have one of my buddies who's I'm gonna say. He could be righter than you, Kevin. I don't know if he's as right as Fiery or Lou, but anyway, he calls me yesterday and he goes, you know, what you've been talking about with Trump, he will eventually lose you if you have any standards whatsoever. Evidently, he said he was listening to this rally wherever he had the other night, and when he started calling the newspaper people and other Americans scumbags or something, this guy goes, I've had it. I can't have a president ever calling an American citizen a scumbag. I can't do it. I hope some other Republican runs against him. He's lost me. He finally lost me. He's been on the edge for a while, but he lost me. You can't do that. But obviously some people think it's okay. I don't, you know, or we're moving the goalposts or something, but.
Yeah, we're, you know, I've told you this, I think outside of the show. This is he's sort of the natural outcome. You know, we've talked before about Gingrich's assessment that, yep, that Trump is sort of the natural outflow of the Obama years. We tried the outsider, what we thought was the outsider, we got the insider, so we went more outside. And, you know, I'm of a mind that there may be some truth in there. Excuse me. Had to cough. And there may be some truth, but we also, if you look at, you know, how political conversation has changed, based, you know, in the social media world, it's so much coarser, you know, all across the board. It's not, you know, this isn't just a recent phenomenon. This is, you know, people, when you're not face to face with people, it's real, real easy to, you know, to get pretty brash because you're not going to get punched in the face. And so, you know, we've seen this trend, and Donald Trump lived in that world. He, you know, he's been tweeting since Twitter came around, and he's been conducting these, you know, terrible, stupid, you know, Twitter wars and social media wars with the likes of Rosie O'Donnell, as an example, if you remember his long-standing feud with her.
Yeah.
And so people who follow politics have been living that kind of an existence and living in that kind of discourse for so long, and all of a sudden now they have a presidential candidate who is like them. And, you know, I think a lot of people are just, you know, it's just normal, you know, to the way that politics is discussed for them, because that's the way it is on a lot of social media.
Well, I don't, I agree with you, Kevin. I don't know where the connection is, but I sat here the other day listening to Powell's speech, okay? In the mealy-mouthed, sophomoric, I'm just so happy to be in the room and have my face on TV questions the guy was being fed, that I don't think I could never be nasty enough to anybody like to be a Trump. But I will tell you this, if I was in there and had a question to ask, I would stand out like, you know, a rose between thorns, or a thorn between roses or something. And I would say, why are you lying to us? Why are you saying there's no inflation when there is? Why are you telling us that more money pouring into the system than you did in QE3 is just routine? It's not. Why am I paying you to stand up there and say that? I mean, there's a difference between this incredible politeness, I'm just happy to be here, asking the Bears coach questions, you know, like you see in football, and asking stuff that you're supposed to be there for the people that you represent, which is your listener or your writer, the people who read your stuff and everything. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a tougher question. I mean, how many, for years and years, these guys stand up there, Obama did it forever, because nobody wanted to insult him, because he was a good-looking black guy, right? They would say anything, and everybody bowed on him, and don't piss on my shoes and say it's raining. I mean, but we see this constantly, and I honestly believe that all my friends who don't like Trump at all, I will have to absolutely say that the people who are on the other side, that I'll use the term put up with him, his personality, because of because of other stuff when he's made some good moves, I think, in some places. They put up with him because in their mind, he's really no worse than the rest of these people. He's just more gruff and guttural at it. You know, and you know what? They're not wrong, Kevin. They're not wrong.
And we've gotten used to it, too. We've gotten used to that kind of stuff. No, not from the president.
No.
So people say, well, he's not presidential. Well, duh. He never was. He came out of that, you know, that coarse, you know, brash, uncouth world, and everybody knew it when he came along, when he decided he was going to run. So anybody who's supporting him is not going to be that put off by it, because that's what he always was.
But we'd like to think
kind of falls under duh.
But we like to think that someday, I mean, when you think of our presidents, you walk in the Lincoln Memorial and you read some of the guy just basically wrote off the top of his head. It's other than stuff that saints wrote. It's so off the chart. Same thing with Washington. Same with some of Roosevelt's speeches. I mean, the man could make a rat stand up and want to salute the guy. And then we get this, you know, and we were like, is this the best? I'm saying there is something to having some style and ability to the English language, and I mean, which I don't have necessarily, but once in a while to make a point where people might want to remember. I mean,
Look, I want to go back. I want to go back to a more civil time. But what I'm saying too is, it's become ingrained in the culture of politics now, and so anybody who's complaining about Trump and his demeanor and his tweets, if you've ever made a snarky tweet, a sarcastic comment, or the over the top, well, so you want to kill babies, those kinds of remarks. Hey, you're part of it too.
Well, sure, absolutely. I don't disagree.
And, you're part of the reason that we have a guy like Donald Trump in office.
All right, Kevin, we got to
we got
to go to break.
Change ourselves if we want, and that's me included. The things I've tried to do now is tone that down and make sure I tone all of that stuff down, and also to just not get involved with people who are toxic, because there are people who bring out the worst in me.
I
really just try to avoid it.
I think I'm trying to be direct but nice or something. By the way, oil over $59, big move in oil here this morning. There's no inflation. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and it's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, just from our Weber. This is Kevin O'Neill. S&P Futures now up 950. So we're up, but not as strong as we were earlier. NASDAQ Futures up 31, Dow up 111. Around the rest of the world, we have... We're in Europe. We've got the DAX up 151. These guys are all strong here with this Johnson vote. First, we didn't like this guy. He was so gruff. Whatever, now I guess we like him. DAX up 151. That's 1.1%. FTSE up 131. That's 1.8%. CAC around up 64. That's 1.1%. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei up 598. That's 2.5%. Shanghai up 51, 1.8%. Hang Seng up 673, 2.7%. Again, the deal is we know it. The tariffs that were supposed to go in on December 15th are not going to go in. There's slight cuts in some of the other ones, but they didn't say where. More soybeans being bought and some change to some of the intellectual property stuff, but no details. But I don't know. It's nothing like anybody thought they were going to get, but it's also just phase one, according to these guys. So I'm going to say probably a good deal. 10-year 1.88, the bond minus 0.24. Wow. They're flying back towards zero. They were minus 0.31 the other day. Japan still minus 0.02. Just can't quite get there. Gold up 320, 1475. I would expect the gold to be down today on this news. Silver up 5 cents, 1692. Copper making a little bit of a move, like this is going to help China. We're up to 280. Been in the high 260s for a while. So if you're a China guy, you're thinking that China economy is going to be helped by this. Oil, another big news, up 54 cents, 59.72. So my utterance earlier in the week that the range is now 52 to 59, once you make that 54 to 60, we'll just nudge that up a couple of bucks. Brent up 79 cents, 64.99. Natural gas down another 5 cents, 226. Maybe Mr. Shanahan might be right. RBOB 165. There's a lot of news here today. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Not a lot of news in traffic, as is usual on a Friday morning, but we do have an issue on the Eisenhower inbound at 9th Avenue. There is a crash, and that's causing some delays. Not major delays, but a crash nonetheless that folks have to navigate around. But if you're coming in on the Edens or Kennedy, it's nice and quiet, as is usual on an early Friday morning. Stevenson still looks good. Southside Expressway is all looking good as well. Off the expressways, 83rd at Muskegon Avenue, there's a fire on the back porch at 8103 South Muskegon, and that has crews on the scene working to get that put out. But nothing else to navigate out there, so enjoy a nice, quiet Friday morning commute as you're heading in this morning. Weather today, partly cloudy, a high of 43, similar to yesterday. Right now it is overcast and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 69 today. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, it was the Stocks and Jocks Cup last night, part two, and the Coyotes are sweeping the Blackhawks. They blew out Chicago 5-2 last night in Phoenix, as the Coyotes seemingly own our Hawks so far in 2019-2020. Otherwise, Thursday Night Football was the only other big sporting event last night, and it was the Ravens all over the Jets, 42-21. Chief.
So this article in the Tribune yesterday regarding the CTA cars, which bothers the hell out of me that this is owned by the Chinese, to me, if everybody can't tell that. So I'm not exactly sure what we did. We still can't own stuff over there without being them being 51% owners, but they can own whatever they want here. And why they have to own this place, I have no idea. But anyway, it's another story. But guy says, this particular car, all the components are under floor, so it's kind of like a massive jigsaw underneath to figure out how to get all the major components under floor at one time. Now, if you listen to Stocks and Jacks, you'd have the host tell you that the first drawing of any magnitude on a railroad car is always the undercar arrangement drawing. So you learned something here, Matty. What do you think? This guy's saying the same thing. And they're also doing they're handing the CTA 10 cars. Now, remember, these cars are called permanently married pairs. You know what that is, Mr. Weber and Mr. O'Neill?
Permanently married pair?
Yeah.
I would be the wrong person to ask about permanently married.
Just because you're divorced doesn't mean you can't answer the question, you know, just saying. The cars, if you look at the CTA cars, you'll see every two cars on the end of the two-car pair, there's a coupler, like you have in all train cars, that will couple with the car, the next pair. But if you look at the other two in the middle, you'll just see a pipe. There's no coupler between those two. They're permanently married. So not all the
equipment. Oh, okay. Got it.
So not all the equipment has to be on both cars. So you can have, you know, the air conditioner or something on one of the cars and not the other that covers for both cars. So it helps out quite a bit on your undercar arrangement stuff. But the interesting part in a story about politics in America, when Pullman did this for the New York City, there was something called a 10-day revenue test. We didn't have any people on it, but you had to weight it. So literally, you'd figure out how much all the fatsoes in the car weighed, and you brought in bags of kitty litter, and you essentially ballasted the car as if people were on it. Okay, so you have to do that to get it to where the weight's supposed to be in traffic. And even though the New York subway cars or the CTA, these guys specify all this stuff. I mean, that's why when I actually did a bid for like two cars ago, I was the one who did the bid. When I say did the bid, I took the guys who put the material together and the guys who put the labor together, I put the whole thing together. But I mean, I didn't go out and price like the lights and stuff. But I'm going to say virtually every thing you see in there, from the lights to the trucks to the motors, the traction motors to the air conditioners, you don't see the air conditioners. All that stuff is specified in the contract because they've been using it before. They like the headlights are going to be from somebody they've used forever. Same way with the buttons on the cab compartment. So they really know all the history of everything that breaks. Okay, and all your rail car equipment. It's not like a light switch in your house. It's a light switch that is, you know, been designed to be where somebody's fat thumb can hit it like a million times and it'll still work. I mean, it's a whole different brand of ball. I mean, a light switch might cost you $150, that type of thing, and for a good reason. But New York, despite having to telling you exactly what they wanted in there, they still wanted a 10-day revenue test where if anything broke, if a headlight went out, you had to start over again for another 10 days. So even though they know, so it took Pullman a year to get through the revenue test, or that test. So finally, New York said, okay, you can, even though you never passed, we'll let you go and you can start delivering cars. Of course, every time you brought the train into the works over in Queens, where the hell it was, some god-awful back neighborhood, you had to pay the guys off to get into the plant or into the indoor facility. You had to grease the dudes to get in there and, like, repair the headlight. So the amount of money that was flying in cash to the people in New York just to get through this 10-day revenue test. So years later, when you started getting computers and so forth, and I was actually near the tail end of my stuff, one of these guys, Steve Brumble, who was a character, he was a Boeing computer guy. He comes up to me one day and he goes, you know, I always wanted to do this. he somehow programmed something, which I guess you can do now easy, Kevin, but he somehow programmed virtually every part that was on the R46 car, from headlights to, you name it, interior lights to doors to whatever. He said statistically, this train will never pass a 10-day revenue test. It never will. Something, headlight will go out. There's a million parts on this. How can, you know, like if a light goes out in the car, it's not like you can't use it, you know. He said, but the idea of nothing going wrong for 10 days, it's a statistical anomaly. It can't happen. So I hope the CTA doesn't do the same thing to these guys that New York did to Pullman. That's a long story short. Don't tell it, I guess. But so there. Is that enough, Manny? That I have kept track of this. And again, I don't understand why these parts got to come from China. Because all you are is an assembler. You essentially put the stainless steel skin together, and you order all the rest of the crap and bolt it on. For lack of a, I mean, it's a little harder than that, but anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, Kevin.
That's your story, and you're sticking to it. Well, as long as we're going with, inane stories, I just want to, you know, sort of finish up our Beverly Hillbillies. Max Baer Jr. is still alive. He's 82 years old. And because of typecasting, he became much more of a producer and director for the rest of his career than he did acting, because every time he was acting, he had to play Jethro, even if the name was different.
Well, didn't Leonard Nimoy come out with a book, I Am Not Spock?
Yeah. You know, he does turn up in a lot of stuff, but since his Spock days, not as much.
Well, now he's dead.
Do you remember him? Well, yeah, but do you remember him in, like, Mission Impossible?
Oh, he was good in there.
Shows like that.
He was good in there. Well, all those guys are good in there. So, well, the reason why those things aren't on reruns is there weren't 100 of them or something? Don't you have to have 100 shows to be on reruns?
Oh, it's been on before.
Well, the second
one. It'll show up for a while and run, and then... and then go away. You know, shows like Antenna TV, you know, networks like that. Meet TV.
The second one never made it.
The really high numbers in your cable or satellite television.
The second one never made it. Remember, they came back for a second go around. It was Peter Graves came back and a couple of the people, but they had new people. They only lasted 2 years.
Yeah, they actually. There was a year or two when it wasn't Peter Graves either. It was what's the guy's name? Stephen something or other, who was the longtime district attorney on Law and Order as a much older guy.
Oh, that's right. I know who you're talking about. Do you know that Peter Graves was James Arness's little brother?
Yeah, I think I did know that.
Yeah, it was two good actors. Wow.
Really good actor in Stalag 17. Yeah. He was fantastic.
Well, James Arness got kind of locked up in the Gunsmoke for like 17 years or something, so a long time.
Yeah, for forever.
Yeah.
So that was a show with a little bit of a run, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I actually watched something on YouTube, and a lady who ended up being his, what was that? Well, ended up being his wife. I don't know, his first wife or second wife. She said he was always, you know, they didn't see each other very much after they met because he was always doing this and going there for shootings for the thing being shot. So finally he said, well, let's go camping. And they went camping, and I said, when did you decide you first really liked him? He said, well, he was this big star, and we showed up this camping thing, just the two of us. He spent the next hour cleaning up the campground from all the people who were there before us because he didn't like to see anything outside dirtied. When he did that, I knew I liked him. Isn't that something?
Yeah, hey, man with principles. Yeah. That's kind of cool to see.
And I didn't realize he was 6'7". He's the tallest actor we've virtually anybody's. John Wayne was 6'4" or something. Forrest Tucker was.
Yeah, Chuck Connors was really tall.
Yeah, 6'5", 6'6". The Rifleman. He played for the Cubbies. And he played for. Yeah. He played pro basketball.
Dodgers, too, I think. I think that's, you know, when he was in Los Angeles is when he got more into acting.
He's renowned as the first guy to play professional basketball to shatter a backboard.
Oh, no kidding.
Not with some big, huge dunk. He just rifled a pass and hit the backboard. The thing broke.
New definition of a brick, huh?
Yeah, well, I'm sure the backboards were a little different qualities. That'd be in the 50s. Anyway, so, Kevin, we have this somewhat culmination. All the stuff we're worried about, and again, I don't know how you, this Chinese thing to me, because for some reason I've followed it, and the reason why I have, not like I'm one of these the people who are the negotiators, I followed it because my mother's cousin, my second cousin, told me the story years ago about how they went over there with the mining company and the Chinese wanted to buy one of everything they did so they could copy it, so they wouldn't sell it to them. And I've been, you know, sort of keeping track of, you know, they got the bid on the Bay Bridge. And they came in $1 billion over budget, you know. So there's the history of why we're doing this. I don't have any idea. And yet, and I also understand how difficult it is for Trump or anybody in that office. I mean, they're stealing something from, you know, Kevin O'Neill. You're pissed off about it. But Maddie Weber's selling, you know, pick something, Rice-A-Roni over there, and they're buying it like hotcakes. He doesn't want any. He thinks everything's fine. So it's,
why would you buy rice like hotcakes?
Well, I just
buy hotcakes.
Well, you can just buy hotcakes. But I'm saying there's such an unevenness. Obviously, the farmers, it's seriously one way. I mean, they're buying stuff which our guys need to sell, right? I mean, you're not gonna get a farmer pissed off that you sell to the Chinese. I don't think. It is so uneven. I don't even know how the whole idea of a policy, you know, in this part about we're gonna hit tariffs on them. Well, the tariffs you put on people is if you could line up the 5 or 10 biggest, you know, knaves from the Chinese part of the world, probably none of those people were affected by the tariffs. I mean, why are we punishing other people? I mean, our whole thing here, I think, was just, I don't know what it was. I mean, do we like tariffs because there's revenue there too? And are we mixed up because of that? I mean, I just can't. I couldn't run a thread through this whole thing and say that somehow or another we were organized in this thing. I mean, I don't. We just kind of went from spot to spot to spot to spot, and if it ended up okay, I guess I'm good with it, right? But it just seemed. Now, the next time Boeing comes up with a plane, are they still going to sell? Give them the drawings because they want to sell them the plane. I don't know. Does this thing address that or not?
I don't know if it does or not, but yeah, I think there are different levels of this. There really is stealing, and there is I sold it to you. Well, what'd you expect? You
yeah.
And it, you know, look, if you we've had this conversation enough times, we don't have to beat it up.
No.
But you know, if that's the way you want to do business, if you want to, you know, do business and cede control of that, that's fine. If we don't want that to happen, then you make it illegal, and you don't allow it to happen. But once it's legal and a company decides to do it, then hey, you know, caveat emptor, or caveat, in this case, caveat seller. But you know, if you give it up, don't complain about it.
Well, yeah, and there are people who will trade off the brothers copiers was the big one, because they didn't even put the brothers. They using the brother's name on it. Dr. J was telling me that they were making some knockoff Ford pickups over there, and they were actually putting the Ford name on the thing, or something. You know, who knows? But I sort of get all that. But it's are we going to let it in the hands of Maddie Weber that says, okay, you're going to go over. Maddie's young, but say he was 65 years old. In the first 2 years, you're going to sell 1 million copiers over in China, and then it's going to drop off precipitously because those guys are going to copy your copiers and going to be selling stuff that looks just like yours, but you're not going to get it. So after 2 years, you might be only selling 200,000. And Maddie goes, well, you know what? The three of us that own this firm, we're all 65. If we can sell 2 million copiers and get all that money for 3 years and retire, we're good with it. Now, are you going to tell them that they can't do that? Maybe I would, but are we going to come up with a list of stuff that we can't sell them, like which would be the logical thing? We still don't have that list, do we, or do we?
No, logical's not allowed, Tom.
No, it's. But anyway, I'm glad the thing's over. If I never get another tweet out of the White House or China moving the market 40 points about whether the thing is on again, off again, I think that would be a very big positive step. Because to be honest with you, I'm tired of them. I think they've been front run every single time, especially from the Chinese side, and nobody cares, you know. But if you had, God help you, if you try and front run something or make any money, Kevin, they're on you like white on rice.
Yeah, how about it?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I kind of lost in the shuffle, too, is that we got USMCA done.
Yeah. Now, how much different it is than the other one, I don't know, but I would say that...
I've heard it described as about 90% NAFTA.
Well, but I would say, Kevin...
And that could be okay. That, you know, that can be just fine. If the 10% is addressing the right things, that's fine.
I don't... I mean, is it... was? I guess my question is, was it necessary for Trump to insult everybody up and down and the people before him that did it, it's a bad deal and they're all idiots and blah, blah, blah? Why not just say, it's a 25-year-old agreement. It needs to be redone. It needs to be gone over. It's probably 90% still good, 10% not so good. Why can't you just say that?
Yeah, and I go back to our earlier discussion. Was it necessary? Of course not. Is it what Trump does? Yes, we know this. You know, so you don't like it? Vote for somebody else.
Well, that's if you can find somebody else. But
yeah, well, that gets to be the problem. We're not being given very good choices here.
No, and anyway, is there anybody in this country that would think that a 20 or 25 year old agreement didn't have to be 10% massaged after that length of time? The answer would, why would anybody say no to that? Right? Now whether this part about...
Well, and especially, you know, especially the dairy people. I know, you know, because I know a dairy farmer here, I know especially in Wisconsin that was a huge deal. And, you know, so cleaning up those dairy provisions was really, really big in there. And, you know, by sitting on it, you know, the Democrats were just pissing off people in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, but that is a, let's put it this way. I understand that it comes down on the individual dairy farmers, all right? But the Canadian motivation is, and they will tell you, because I talked to somebody, our people here, despite what they think, that Trump's going to help them out or anybody else is going to help them out, we don't give a rat's behind about the dairy farmers here. The Canadians do. That's why they protect them. The same way we protect the sugar farmers here. We've had a sugar tariff since before you and I were born, Kevin. And it's why we protect the lumber people here. If we didn't protect the lumber people here, there wouldn't be any lumber people here. Because the Canadian cost of production is so much cheaper than ours. So it's not like countries don't... I mean, and I would have these discussions with people, and this was a hot topic, and they look at our school and our dairy farmers. I said, don't you understand every country has their sacred cow. I mean, there's tariffs on rice in Japan because they want the ability to feed themselves in case a war happens or something, and they want to put them all out of business. They all know that if there was no tariffs in Japan, between us and the Vietnamese and the Thai, you would not have a competitive dairy farmer in Japan. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not all our people. You think, other than the fact that Wisconsin has become a swing state, how much time do you think in Washington has been spent on a dairy farmer in Wisconsin? Who cares? You think it's ever...
Now it's a swing state, so it's very important.
Yeah, now it's very important. But, you know what I'm saying? Did anybody think that they care about these people? I'm just saying.
Well, I'm trying to think, because lumber was a big bone of contention, too. So
yeah, well,
which swing state did that one get?
Well, but the lumber is we want to maintain their protection. It's the other way around. Right?
Yeah, most of the lumber is coming from Canada.
Right. And you don't see the sugar guys saying, bag the sugar, tariff.
Or put it in packets.
Or put it in little packets, yeah. anyway, we'll see how the market and everything all comes out on this stuff. And it'll be interesting to see, Kevin, if it's all baked in. And not now what? You know, by the way, we had a hot CPI number the other day, 0.3%. We have a chairman who's in denial. What do you make of these? If you were to look, if I were to make my list of inflation stuff, if I were going to add prices of major league teams and pitcher salaries, Matty, what do you think the highest pitcher was paid in the year 2000?
Per year?
Yeah.
Probably half of the highest pitcher today.
So you think they're making 15?
I think that's a good guess. Maybe even less than that.
Okay, so the CPI would say that anything from 2000 to today should be 51% higher. So you're saying it's doubled. Again, the CPI is wrong. What do you think the price of a team is from 2000 to today? It's got to have doubled, maybe tripled. Right?
So I can tell you, I just Googled, of course it's not by pitcher, actually I do have by pitcher, and by the way, we were dead on. The highest paid pitcher in the year 2000 was Kevin Brown.
Kevin Brown.
You remember him?
No, I don't.
You don't? Oh, he was a great pitcher in the 90s and early 2000s. Came up with the Marlins and won a World Series in
97.
But he signed a huge contract with the Dodgers. And his salary in 2000 as the highest paid pitcher was $15.7 million.
So you know your stuff.
And that was a complete guess by me, but it turns out it was dead on.
Yeah, well, okay. What do you suppose the price of a team was?
Now the highest paid pitcher in 2019, $42
million. Oh, I thought it was 31.
Well, Max Scherzer, the Gerrit Cole deal was the highest paid total salary, $324 million over 9 years. But
okay.
It's 36 per year. Per year, Max Scherzer in 2019 made $42 million.
Wow.
And in 2018, Kershaw was the highest at 35.5.
So, and of course, just to aggravate myself, I had to go and see that everybody's paying sales tax in Washington to pay for that stadium. Now, do you think that some schlump little living on the street has to go in and buy his bottle of Coke and pay tax so this guy can make $42 million a year? Just saying.
As Fari would say, you know, what a country.
Yeah, what a country.
Good work if you can get it.
All right, guys. So what
hey, about, before you kick me off of here, Maddie, what's the deal for Bears-Packers? What do you think?
You know, I don't see any shot of the Bears winning, or at least I'll believe it when I see it, just because as improved as Mitch has been over the last 3 or 4 weeks and as improved as Matt Nagy has been, in my opinion, in play calling and just overall sort of game planning, they haven't proven that they can do it on the road against a good team. And so I need to
this is a show me game, isn't it?
It's a show me game. Now if they go in there and play well, even if they don't win, and if they don't win then their season is over. But even if they don't win but they go there and play well and they lose, you know, 27-24 and it's a good game, I'll almost be satisfied with that. But if they go there and it's another kind of crappy showing by the offense and, you know, they lose 17-7 cuz the offense can't do anything, then I'm just going to be pissed.
How much
if they have that former scenario that you described, that will tell us how badly Nagy, blew out the season early on by, you know, overloading Trubisky, not letting him run, and all of the things that were wrong with play calling, all of the things that we're making. Now, some of that is offensive line coming together too. So I'll give it that, but so much of this. Trubisky, working with a third of the playbook or half of the playbook or whatever he has is a much better quarterback. And if it's going to take him longer to learn the whole damn thing, then that's the way it goes. In the meantime, give him what he can do well and stop asking him to do what he can't. And it looks like they've done that. And if we see that on Sunday, then I'm just going to go back and you can start counting the games that they just gave away, by, you know, taking the wrong approach.
Do you ever notice how when the offensive line gets better, the play calling gets better?
Well, yes, except the play calling is definitely different now. They are not going sideways so darn much.
Do you think they got to let you go here, Kevin, but do you think they waited too long to realize how badly hurt Kyle Long was? I think that was part of it.
Well, they let's put it this way. They counted on a guy that they should have just considered a bonus if he was able to go, but needed to have a plan for if he was not able to go.
Yeah, they really sorted it. All right, Kevin, take care of yourself. Talk to you next week. SP Futures now only up $1.50. We said a big drop. NASDAQ Futures up 10. We'll see. Pedro DaCosta, backed by popular demand after the break.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, just from Weber on the board. SP Futures were just, they were up 12, then they got down to like unchanged, and we bounced back half there. We can't seem to want to let it go down today on the big day with the Chinese agreement. Well, now everybody's questioning the details, and there don't seem to be very many. SP Futures up 5.25, NASDAQ Futures up 21. We also have back Pedro da Costa. Pedro, when I was watching the news conference the other day, first of all, welcome back. And all
Thank
I kept
you.
Thinking of is, where the hell's Pedro? That looked to me like a bunch of beat writers that are a bunch of jack sniffers sitting there interviewing like the coach and they have to say only nice things to him. What was that interview about the other day? Where were you? I missed you.
I haven't been at the Fed press conference for a while, but and I won't bash my fellow Fed reporters as far as their questioning. But I think what happens is it ends up being very inside baseball and very, like, nitty-gritty focused because they are beat reporters, and then you don't kind of tend to lose the big picture, and the high-impact questions don't get asked because you have a very narrow group of reporters that's in there. And that's by design, by the way. The Fed handpicks the Fed reporters that are going to be in there, and so that's how it goes.
So if...
And they handpick who's going to get the questions and who sits in the front row and so on.
You were not a front row guy, I don't imagine.
I used to be a front row guy when I was at Reuters. I was in the front row for many years. And I was also in the front row when I was at the Wall Street Journal. And then they didn't like my questions so much, and I haven't gotten the questions since.
So you would you have asked something like, you're spending more money than when you did at QE3, you tell us not to call it QE4, and you tell us it's just...
No, I didn't ask that one, although that would have definitely been my question yesterday.
Yeah.
What I'm shocked about, I want to ask you guys questions today, because I want to know what the heck is going on in the repo market, in the sense that after that wobbly press conference that you just described, where he really waffled on the repo issue, where he had to read off the statement, he looked really nervous about it, which was not confidence-inspiring. Then we get this New York Fed statement the day after, basically ramping up the size of purchases to a level that becomes harder not to call quantitative easing or some kind of easing. And, you know, I really want to know what the heck is going on in the retail market, and I'm not quite sure yet. I want to make a bunch of phone calls today to figure out what is going on.
My Fed buddies have been off traveling around the world, so I haven't had a chance to grill them. But from what I can gather from my own somewhat half-assed opinion, because I honestly don't know, is I think that some part of it, Pedro, might be, for many years, there really hasn't been a federal funds market. I know some guys, I hang around the same saloon that Maddie Weber and I go once in a while. That's what they used to do, and they all got laid off. So I'm not so sure that if Chase needs, you know, $200 million tonight and they call, you know, Citibank, there's even anybody there to take the call. I mean, I think that because one of my Fed guys did tell me at one point, one night or for a week, M0 was bigger than M1, which is the amount of money that the banks had sent back to the Fed and they're getting paid interest on. So I think banks should send the money there. So if actually there is a need for cash, I don't think the banks I think that whole system, even though we seem to think that there's one there, is kind of wrong. And maybe the regulations make it so that, you know, Citigroup can't send $5 billion to Deutsche Bank overnight without causing problems on their balance sheet.
Maybe, although I honestly think that this regulatory argument is a little bit of a red herring, because, I mean, banks are always complaining about regulation, right? So for them to say that, oh, my God, there's a dislocation in the market, blame the fact that somehow I have to ramp up my holdings of treasuries because of regulatory constraints, I don't really buy that story. You know, the Fed, what you say about the lack of infrastructure in the Fed funds market is actually really interesting and valuable, because I think there was a dismantling of the infrastructure just because it was kind of, you know, the zero rate process was just left it kind of idle and there was no trading there, and they had to kind of revive it. And that's why they had to introduce the interest on reserves rate, they thought, because they had to kind of force the market's way in a way. And I think the Fed underestimated the size of the balance sheet that it needed to keep the market with ample reserves in a kind of post-crisis environment. And, you know, it really has been a sharp reversal from a policy of winding down the balance sheet to suddenly just buying bonds galore.
Well, I think one thing that you and I think understand that is, first of all, I think it's very difficult to understand, and it's taken a while for me. You're younger. The balance sheet is nothing more than stuff you've bought with made-up money, correct?
Yes, it's created reserves.
So if they go, if there's $100 billion worth of mortgages on the balance sheet, it means the Fed has essentially sent out a check for $100 billion that's made up cash. It clears, and they now have the mortgage. That's the balance sheet. But the real thing is they made up the $100 billion.
Cash becomes very real.
Yeah. Yes. What I was mentioning about the regulation. The only reason why there are some snafus in the reg system, because my guys at the Fed had the exchanges now have an open window to the Fed.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons for that was, this is a few years ago when I first started, you know, being friendly with these guys. If an exchange, for instance, say OCC or DTC, had, you know, $400 million one night too much because of the way people were buying and selling stock, none of the banks would take it.
Yeah.
Which is, so let me get this straight. We got banks that you can't give them cash and they don't make loans. Well, that's one hell of a banking system you've devised, right? But the idea was, if you gave Citigroup $500 million at night, they actually needed to up their capital because that was considered to be fast money. And so the deposit made them needed more. Pedro, can anybody be dumb enough to create a system like that? You can't take cash into a bank? That's the whole point of a bank.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
But Carl.
The bigger mystery to me is just, you know, and I think what came across in the press conference is really how much of a tug of war. And that's, I think, why it seems so uncertain, is because Powell seems uncertain and the policy direction seems uncertain. How do you go from cutting rates three times to having to increase the size of your balance sheet at the same time and also not really giving clear signals as to kind of what the drivers are for your policy moves. It was kind of trade uncertainty, and now trade uncertainty has been somewhat removed. You mentioned the trade deal with China. I don't think there is a trade deal. I don't think Trump ever strikes any deals. He just, you know, he signs empty pieces of paper.
Thought that you asked, I'll finish the last, we've had people on the show, mostly mainly Carl Denninger, who says there's somebody in trouble and they're just not telling us.
That's exactly what I said to a colleague of mine today on, you know, via direct message on Twitter. I want to know what financial institution is running into trouble. And that's actually what I, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, I have no knowledge, I have no rumors, I don't know any names, but the sense that I get and the sense of concern that I got from Powell is that there's a major firm in trouble. That's just my inkling of suspicion. I could be totally wrong.
I think what you're saying, maybe more articulate than me, is I look at, well, of course, he told us 2-3 weeks ago not to look at these old numbers. They're for old people, basically. I look at this and I go, all right, let me get this straight. Every one of these guys does nothing but stand in front of you and tell you how good the market is, how big a raises people are getting, which is all BS. All this stuff, unless you're a major league pitcher, every day they keep telling you, basically, you know, putting salve on a wound and telling you how great the world is. And yet, I look at the money supply growing higher than it did during 2008. I look at the amount of the balance sheet, like you just talked about, growing faster than at any time during QE3, and they're telling me nothing's wrong. None of this matches, Pedro. I wish I could tell you this is what it is, but I'm seeing the same thing you are. This does not match up. You know, no, there's no chance of us going to war with Indiana. Yet, why do you have 48,000 tanks all gassed up on the border between you and Indiana? I mean, what are they there for? Well, they're there just for an exercise. Okay, I guess I could believe that, but I mean, it's not like, you know, the money supply is going 4, 5, 6. It's going 9. I mean, I don't think I've heard seen 9 since the 70s, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where this is headed. And as you said, the economic situation is baffling as well. Not baffling, but it's hard to explain to the public because you get these solid, hard headline numbers, but you have all this softness and weakness underneath that ranges from the amount of, you know, you always get the response as soon as you get. I sent out a tweet saying, Powell talking about the low unemployment rate and how great things were on the job market side. And everybody just immediately responds is like, you know, but I need 2 or 3 jobs now instead of one. And so that doesn't really count. And so that's always the response that I get from, you know, random readers and commenters. So.
Well, I'll help you out a second so you don't have to do it because it was maybe you won't get a rainy day on Saturday when I went through all this stuff. You know what I think is happening, Pedro, is, the numbers, and you know, I'm not a mathematician or anything, but the numbers have been skewed or lied about for so long that they don't tell you anything. What I say is if you look at the median income of somebody since 2000, it's up maybe 7 or 8%, maybe.
Yep.
And you look at
for CEOs, it's up. I don't know, 300%.
Right, but what I'm saying, we're not even going down that road. I'm just saying that. The bare numbers, and yet you see some of the stuff. The inflation rate that they count is up 51%. I went through, you know, hospitalization, Medicare stuff. Those kinds of things are up like 300%. But what you're running into is you can be. It always seems like it's some lady doing this, but I don't want to be sexist. Maybe too late. There's always some deaf, you know, somebody on TV are going to say, "Well, boy, look at how the wages are up this year from 3%." And I go, okay, but we're talking about a guy who's is at $10, and now he's $10.30 an hour, and yet the 2% that the inflation went up, because it's so much higher and we're not counting that, the 2% in hospitalization is now like $400, or it's more than the increase. In other words, I think people need a raise.
I don't know why you're blaming the ladies here. I see plenty of dudes making argument on TV, Tom.
Maybe I just listen more to the ladies or something. I don't know. But
I'm just kidding. My worry is actually the following. So we talk about what real inflation actually is and what the real unemployment rate is, and how those numbers have changed over time and how that. But my real concern is that the level of inequality, income and wealth inequality in this country is so great that your headline numbers no longer tell you what's underneath
right.
the surface. Now there's a push for, Heather Boucher at Equitable Growth is pushing for the BLS to actually release a kind of, an income percentile weighted kind of GDP. So you can actually know what GDP is growing like for each strata of the population, because you don't really get a sense of what the standard of living improvement. GDP growth no longer correlates with standard of living improvements for
right.
the majority
oh,
of people, and I think that's a big problem.
Well, I'll give you one quick example, because I decided to dig into the cost of education, right? And a lot of education, certainly the primary and secondary levels, is part of your taxes. I mean, I think most people in Illinois, right on their taxes, it'll say, you know, 55%, somewhere between 52 and 58% goes to schools. So I dug into the property taxes in Illinois, which are, by the way, aren't even in the CPI. Some of them are in there in that pure economic rent, maybe a little bit, but not specifically. That since 2000, they've averaged 3.3, 3.5% increase a year. And if you look at people's average wage, which is way less than that. And this is what I was talking about on the creep on the numbers, Pedro. And you might be the only one person who can, if they froze them today, just froze them, property taxes, with the increases people are getting in their wages right now, how many years do you think it would take to be back to the same percentage of your income as 2000?
Oh, gosh, a whole lot of decades.
Like 28.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how much, when you lie about one and don't count the other right, you can get so far afield. As I calculate that the person, the median income of $33,000 a year, or $36,000, whatever it is now, I calculate that person needs a one-time 20 to 30% increase, like tomorrow, just to get the numbers anywhere near back together to where you could talk about them. They're that far off.
That matches up with the broader, you know, inequality readings, which have worsened. Not only income inequality as a whole, but the racial wealth gap has also worsened after
yep.
the recession, because low income Americans and particularly blacks and Hispanic families have a lot of wealth in their homes, and the values of homes in certain neighborhoods got hit harder than others.
Oh, sure.
So
yep.
there was a huge loss of wealth in low-income communities that didn't affect, the residents of New Canaan, Connecticut quite as much.
Well, you know, it's still affecting my significant other, and she's on a bunch of, Audrey does a lot of house, well, she's a real estate person, in addition to being still a broker here at PTI, but she does... in her area, the places that hit, they were 230 in 2007. They're still only back to like 210, 215. They're not all the way back. Maybe
yeah.
some have gotten back to even, but they're not all the way there. Especially if you got hit and didn't do the maintenance on it, and because now you didn't remodel the kitchen or the bathroom, you're not getting the 230 that you paid for it.
Absolutely, and the Midwest is especially walloped because. You guys never really got the bulk of the surge, but you definitely got hit with
right.
the downturn. So that was a really, a tough thing, and
well,
it remains. So I have a colleague out in Ohio, director of a shop called Ohio Policy Matters, and she did a paper on the next recession prospects, therefore, and her basic take was that Ohio no longer recovers from recessions. That the last couple of recessions, Ohio... all the economic indicators for Ohioans never quite get back to pre-recession levels. So
I would say, kind of what you're saying is that if you looked at various sections of the economy, I'm going to say you could be 50, 60, 70% that never came out of the last recession.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, they're every year their credit card bill is a little higher. They're living, with. You can say that's something that you shouldn't be doing, but it's funny. Again, Pedro, I love having you on, but because I like to throw stuff at you, because I did this very dumb calculation here. Now it just went up, by the way, because they raised all these fees. That if you gave somebody a job in Illinois, and he had to go out and buy himself a $5,000 car, if you gave him the dough for the car, and the insurance, that the just his titles, his sales tax, his license plates, city sticker, the first 65 hours of his work at $10 an hour goes to the state. And you bought him the car. I mean the value of a $10 an hour thing job is so low in my mind, considering what the fees are. God help you get a parking ticket, because they're $75. So that's a whole day's work to pay a parking ticket,
it's
right?
Deadly, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's absolutely being poor in America is a ruthless game.
Because we've gone from, you know, and now Trump wants to cut back on the food stamp program. What do they call it?
Oh my God, man, that is just ruthless. That's literally taking food away from like babies and grandmas.
Well, the idea being is these people, there is a more, by the way, they don't call it food stamps. What do they call it now? There's a name for it.
SNAP,
okay. You know, the interesting part there, and you probably know these numbers better than me, it's not the 40 million people that are on food stamps. There's another 20 or 30 that actually qualify, and either don't know they qualify or are too proud to do it. And they're all working.
That's definitely true.
They're all working. Right. You know, the idea that the people that are poor now aren't working is the single biggest mental fart, I think, that rich people have.
They think, absolutely. It's a ruse.
Yeah. Why does that mean, you've been in Washington for what? Why? What happens when you go in the Beltway and you lose all contact with people?
You know, I don't know that they actually lose contact. They just become cynical enough to not care. I mean, politicians, you have to wonder, you know.
What is your
policies are like taking people's health care away, taking people's food away, trying to mess with the census so that you undercount certain populations specifically so that they don't get services, so they don't get counted in the voting districts. It's really just perverse. So,
well, what's the motivation? Do they just think that somehow those people don't deserve it, they're subhuman? I mean, what is it?
I think a really cynical motivation is that, you know, Republicans in particular don't feel that they can win on democracy because they're losing the popular majority as far as the changing demographics of the United States. So voter suppression, you know, it's a technique of voter suppression and power, you know, maintenance of power, to be really cynical.
Well, at least when people didn't have women voting, I wouldn't agree with that, but I could understand it in the sense that probably 99% of the people were married. You had your own farm and you had your own thing, and each family was kind of a unit. So I guess they considered it one vote, I guess, for family. Now what that would do for a lady who was not married and was a teacher or something else, why she shouldn't get the vote, I have no idea. But I at least there was, I'm going to say, I won't say some logic to it, but I can understand at least the thought process. I wouldn't agree with it, but now the idea, what listen on the way in, Maddie, what state was it? 250, is it Wisconsin? They're trying to say 250,000 people are ineligible to vote because they did something and something?
Votes are being suppressed
sure.
Everywhere,
they're
yeah.
Trying in every darn state. I mean, it's outrageous. So, and even in Florida, look at Florida, where they literally they passed by referendum a very reasonable law that returned the rights of felons, 1.4 million people, to vote. And the governor is trying to block it in every way he can. So it's like dirty politics 101.
Well, I mean, I guess any guy who's not going to vote for you shouldn't be registered, right?
I think that's pretty much the way it goes.
That's very. I can understand. It's very South Side. You know, it's like a. We're gonna bust people out of the.
It's very mob-like. It's very mob-like. Our political system is becoming mob-like because you know you have somebody with ties at the very top.
But now, Pedro, even a guy like you, who's obviously loves people and stuff, now when you get up there on election day and say, doesn't matter who you vote for, I just want to let you know that your vote is important. Get out and vote. Now, do you really mean that if a guy is torn between watching the football game and going out to vote against you, he shouldn't just stay home and watch the football game?
Oh, I mean, no, I wouldn't just be out there saying vote. I think it's important to vote for the right person. I'd be out there saying the person of what the heck is wrong with their vote. I mean, when somebody's opening gambit is that, you know, Mexicans are rapists, you should really, your ears should perk up. And, oh, yeah. And mine did, because my name is Pedro, so.
Yep.
So there.
So I assume by that you're not a rapist.
No, definitely not. And I have concerns about, you know, who may be in positions of power given all the weird things that are going on.
Boy, isn't it? I tell you what, you wonder how big a net this guy in Florida has, huh?
That's what I'm talking about. You just don't know how far that thing goes. And if it goes from the American presidency potentially twice the British crown, I mean, how large is this ring, right?
Well, let me ask you a question that'll get you back.
Did you see that the victim, by the way, the Prince Andrew's, I won't even say alleged, Prince Andrew's victim, Virginia Guffrey is now like, had to, because she came out and gave that interview, including her claims, you know, she now is, her life is in danger.
Oh, I'm sure.
Threatened. So I'm literally talking about mob tech. It's pretty grotesque.
If you were of an ilk that says maybe there's some power behind the scenes in Washington, I look at this Denny Hastert situation, and I'm saying somebody put that guy in that spot and had something on him. Now my question is, are there 15 or 20 more people like that that went down there that somebody essentially has on their, as the Irish would say, put them in me book?
I'm telling you, look at Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan is a walking, compromised man. He looked the other way. You know, it's a sexual assault.
Yeah.
And on a large scale, and there are multiple witnesses. And the guy's sitting there in Congress yelling at technocratic witnesses, ambassadors,
yeah.
You know. It's really, I don't know what we've devolved into. I didn't used to be that cynical, to be honest.
No.
When I first moved to Washington.
Well, I'm glad you're getting cynical. I'm glad you're getting cynical, not just by talking to me.
I thought maybe that was as bad as it could get, but little did I know.
All right, well, I want you to promote your podcast, but first you got to ask me a question. You are getting somewhat cynical on your own. It's not just because you talk to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, being in Washington in these last couple of years, it's hard not to get cynical, man. The amount of stuff that people are getting away with is pretty gross.
Well, I'd love to have you on a little more regularly if that's okay with you, but right now, why don't you give yourself a shameless plug?
That would be my pleasure to come back, and yeah, please tune in to the State of Working America podcast, which is now in season 2. Basically, like, you know, it's a mix of policy and workers' voices, so it's really exciting, and I'm really proud of the project.
Hey, why don't you give Maddie a link? We'll throw it on our site.
No problem.
Absolutely. EPI.org/podcast.
All right, we'd love to do that, buddy. Take care of yourself. SP Futures
Thank
up 750,
so much,
kind of the middle of where it's been the morning. We're up 12, we're unchanged, and now we're maybe middle to high middle. NASDAQ up 27. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures now back up 9. We got down almost unchanged. NASDAQ futures up 32. Matty, I'm struggling. I got so much stuff up on this machine as I'm reading about Yeltsin and in China. Now, it's not said boo about this trade deal. Now, they claim they're going to have a press briefing today, so just going through all these headlines. It's interesting. Boris Johnson, boy, got all the stocks are up in Europe and in Asia, but why don't you do Trevor Weathersport. Oh, there we go. DAX up 109.8%. It was up more than that a minute ago. FTSE up 132, 1.8%. They were up over 2. CAC around up 55.9. So everything is still way up, but not as up as they were. Asia, however, as soon as this thing flips, Japan and Hong Kong are both up more than 2.5%. Nikkei up 598 at 2.55%. Shanghai up 51, 1.7%. Hang Seng up 693. That's 2.6. Bonds, Japan still can't get back up over zero, but the Bund is minus 0.29, which is pretty, and gold, I mean, oil is up over $59 a barrel. So big move in oil this morning as well. So there's increases all over the place. And again, ours is 1.89. The Bund minus 0.24 and Japan minus 0.02. So why don't you give us Trevor Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash out in Bolingbrook coming in on I-55 northbound side just before Route 53. There's a crash causing congestion on the Stevenson there, so keep that in mind if you're heading in from the southwest suburbs, as there's pretty significant delays developing on I-55 on the inbound side. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57. Or the Bishop Ford, a nice quiet Friday morning travel times. Traffic building further inbound on the Stevenson, but nothing out of the ordinary as you approach Cicero. Eisenhower looks good. Kennedy and Eden's traffic building, but no accidents to report.
We do have some crashes off the expressways, though. Out in suburban Wheaton, Roosevelt Road at Winfield Road, there is an accident. Looks like we have a couple of crashes on Cicero in the city. There's one at Cicero and 24th Street that's blocking the right lane. And then just south of there, Cicero and 37th Avenue, there's a crash blocking the right lane as well. So a couple of issues on Cicero. One other crash in the area, Devon at Mittel Boulevard, which is in the northwest suburbs. There is a crash. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, but relatively mild temperatures for mid-December, a high of 43. Right now it's overcast and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 69 today. Right now it's clear and 47. In sports, it was the Blackhawks losing big down in Phoenix last night. Coyotes topped the Hawks 5-2. Bulls and Suns were both off. And in NFL action, Thursday Night Football, it was Baltimore all over the New York Jets, 42-21.
That's one of the first clunker games they've had on national TV in a while. Most of them are pretty good.
I agree. Sure. Even the Thursday Night games, which have been historically bad, have been pretty good this year for the most part.
Well, the one when they first came out with those things, I don't think I watched any of them. It was always like the... They gave the teams they were being punished or something, the Thursday night game.
Right. It was very rarely a good matchup on Thursday night, and the guys you could tell were a step slow, and they're still a step slow on Thursday nights. I mean, it's just you can't expect players to be healed up and ready to go after essentially 3 days' rest. But they have put better matchups on there. Last night, though, Baltimore is just – they're outpacing everyone right now. Yep. I mean, they're the class of the league. That quarterback, every team pretty much passed on him. He was drafted at the very end of the first round, and anyone could have had him. And people thought, you know, he was a great athlete, but he couldn't be a pocket passer in the NFL. And, boy, is he proven people wrong. The guy looks unbelievable, throwing and running.
Yeah, I would say they had their personnel everywhere else is spectacular as well.
Well, that was the thing. They were kind of a ready-made team. They have a great offensive line with a Hall of Fame guard, Marshall Yanda. And a good running game. They've had a great defense there for 20 years. They have a good coach that's won a Super Bowl. They just hadn't had a quarterback. And they had Joe Flacco for a long time, who was, you know, solid when he was younger, but then as he aged, he was just terrible and threw a lot of interceptions, and they were just kind of missing that one ingredient. And they drafted this kid and groomed him last year, and this year they gave him the reins, and he's just been unbelievable. And they blew out the Patriots. They beat the 49ers. I mean, they haven't played the easiest schedule either, and they're just killing everybody.
Yeah, you said we had a bunch of tweets.
Yeah, we have a bunch of tweets regarding the Pedro conversation. A lot of good feedback on that, which I thought it was good as well. Kevin writes in real quick, before we get too dramatic about the SNAP work requirement, there is a list of exceptions that includes dependent children up to age 18, caring for an elderly person, attending school or job training, in drug rehab, physically or mentally ill, pregnant, and more. In addition, getting a job doesn't necessarily mean a person will lose the SNAP benefit. A low-wage job does not mean no more benefit, but having any job, including a low-wage job, is the best step one can take toward getting a higher-wage job.
Well, there's a line here. It's always amazing that everybody's idea of a moral hazard is always somebody else, not them, right? It's never a moral hazard for you to control the board with your guys instead of people that maybe the shareholders put there and all they do is vote you raises. There's no moral hazard to that. But God help you if you give somebody making $10 an hour food stamps. There's a moral hazard there, right? I mean, out of all the people, we've talked about them incessantly this week regarding impeachment, Tricky Dick, Richard Milhouse Nixon, for those of
you. Your guy. Didn't you vote for him? Or were you not old enough?
No. I didn't vote for him. My first election was...
What year was your first election?
72, Jerry Ford.
There you go.
I voted for him. I liked him. Well, that would have been... No, Nixon already got in his second term, so that...
That's what I was saying. You were not old enough to vote for him.
I couldn't. I was 18 in 1970, so... I don't know if I must have missed that election, but I think 72.
But you were 18 after the November election.
Right.
So there you go. You missed it by a few weeks, right?
And he came up with something called the negative income tax. And I would agree with him on a lot of measures, in the sense that when it comes down to people that don't have enough to eat, okay, let's pick a number and just underneath it. I mean, I get the part about if people can cash them in for drugs and those kinds of things. You got to button up on that stuff. Now, whether you just give people, you know, credits that they pick up at a food store, and it has to be food. That's whatever. I'm saying you got to do it in a way where people can't cheat. That part I get. But at some point, you don't need a bazillion programs. You just, whatever the negative income tax was, if you didn't make any money, you sent it in, and they sent you a check for $5,000. We don't need all these programs here. $5,000, feed yourself, idiot, because you're not working or lazy or whatever, or maybe you're hurt. Maybe you can't work, whatever. We don't want to know. It costs more to try and chase people at that end than it does, you know, instead of having a big-ass program where 80% of the money is grabbed by the people between the top and the bottom, let's just parcel out the dough. You don't need dough? Here's some dough. By the way, if you go out and make $1,000, we're still going to send you a check for $4,500, so it makes sense for you to go out and earn some money because you don't have to give it all back. I'm not saying I was on board with the entire program, but there was a reason for that.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. But I also agree with Kevin. The only way you're going to get a higher wage job, typically, is by starting with a lower wage job and kind of working your way up.
I don't disagree with that.
No one is, you know, very rarely is someone handed a high wage job, like, right out of school. I mean, it does happen, but very rarely.
But there also are places where, you know, everybody knows that if you were, every young girl in Beverly, I think, worked at Fox's Pizza. Right at some point, as a waitress or whatever, every young girl at Orland works for the Orland Bakery on Sunday morning. There's like 20 of them in there serving people rolls. And I understand that you get the job, you're used to getting up, you used to get cleaned up, going to work, showing up on time, doing something, getting a good reference, going to the next job. I get all that, but you can go to work at a Walmart, and it's 20 years later, and you're not anywhere. And McDonald's. Now I understand that those are entry level jobs. But in some of these areas, they are the jobs. There's no next department store from Walmart that if you show you do a good job there, it's going to pay you $15 an hour or 20. In a lot of places, there's not the next restaurant from McDonald's. That's all there is in some of these towns, right?
Right.
So, I mean, it's not as fluid up as you would think. Now, in Kevin's area, fortunately, a lot of it is because, well, unfortunately, a lot of it is because Chicago has become a bleep hole when it comes to jobs. All those distribution jobs used to be all railroad here and everything else.
If you're talking about blue-collar jobs.
Yeah, but
the white-collar jobs here are plentiful.
If you're young and in certain areas.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if you're looking for a white-collar job in Chicago, you can get one, like, in a day.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, I get recruited every day.
But you're
and Jill, like, wasn't even looking for a job, and she got recruited so hard, she actually ended up in a great spot and left a job that she was happy
with.
But
you're in an industry that's growing. You're in internet security and those kinds of things.
True, but I'm just saying, in sales and in marketing and in accounting and all these sort of white-collar jobs, and maybe it's for younger people, maybe 20s and 30s and 40s, but I'm just saying, like, the jobs are plentiful in Chicago.
When I was in the
blue-collar stuff, I would agree with you. That stuff seemingly is gone away.
When I was young, we came down to the trading floor. It was an expanding industry. The CBOE was only 10 years old. If you couldn't get a job down here, you could walk in your underwear and get a job because somebody needed a runner that day because somebody didn't show up.
Sure.
I mean, when stuff is growing, you can do very well. Now, you are in a business, you know, either luckily or by being smart, an industry that's growing.
Combination.
For every one of those, and how many jobs are there in the exchanges now?
In the exchanges, as far as, you know, if you're talking about the open outcry floor, there's no jobs. You're talking about in the financial world, there's tons of jobs.
I'm saying nowhere near as many. They all lay. I'm saying that we're talking about an area down here that had, I'm going to say, 25,000 jobs, and now there's 5?
Well, in that specific role, but it's not like those people are all just gone. They're still working.
Where?
It's not like they're under the bridge.
Baltimore.
Well, I mean, there's probably some people under the bridge, but
well, what I'm saying is,
but I'm saying those 25,000 people didn't just disappear. They're still doing something.
What I'm saying is there are whole industries that are falling apart. There's whole industries that are growing, and like a lot of the stuff that you would never even have dreamt. Now you guys are insecure. Who'd have thought that security would be this big of a job? How many people are in security now? 300,000 countrywide?
It's a lot, yeah. Especially like cybersecurity, yes.
I mean, would I ever have thought in those days to have, back when you could walk on a plane, when you could walk into everything, you know what I'll do? I'm gonna have a a security detail would have and hire 500 people just in case. Have 19 idiots flying to a skyscraper in a Pentagon, and all of a sudden, you know, I'll be rich for the rest of my life.
The bigger industry, though, security is just a sort of service industry. The bigger industry is the payments industry. And the fact that people don't know this, it still blows my mind.
Oh, yeah.
It's the biggest industry in the world. I mean, these FIS and Fiserv and these WorldPay and First Data and TSYS and all these huge companies that are getting acquired for $25 billion and $30 billion that are taking a piece of every single transaction that we make, that own every little terminal we make, and that are reinventing these terminals when you talk about Square and Stripe and PayPal and all these different things to do mobile payments. That's where everyone works.
Right.
And then all these other little pop-up industries like mine, you know, these cybersecurity industries are just latching on to this payment space and selling them technology that protects from people hacking in and intercepting these payments and stealing these payments. But the payments industry, that's where the money's at. That's where everyone's working. That's and it's really unbelievable. And somehow it's like this underground sort of wing of these big financial institutions that no one wants to talk about, because if you shine light on it, people will be like, why the hell are these guys getting a piece of everything?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, and I'm gonna be old here for a second, but the idea that you make something, I pay for it. Now it's got to the point where there's 50 people in the middle of that. Why? I mean, why?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I mean, where is that where the money is? It's like, we all can't sit there and pound out coal like we wanted, like we used to. Plus, I never want to be in a coal mine. But I'm saying, there's something to that. There's something to the convenience of it. There's something to all those kinds of things. But does it have to be? We have huge industries to where we're doing security of people's online stuff in their accounts. We also have people getting stolen from right and left, and the law enforcement could give a rat's behind about. Now, is that connected? I mean, I don't know.
The law enforcement, as usual, is not technologically advanced or smart enough to do anything about it.
Well, they don't want to do it either.
Well, they can't. They can't. We can barely keep up with it. And we hire the best and the brightest, technology people from around the world. Law enforcement people are so far behind, they'll never be able to catch up.
But here's the economic mess up. And I know people have been listening to me lately, essentially spout out economic principles that I thought were legit. And it turns out, I don't know why they're not working. I don't know who's in charge or what the deal is. To me, I got a credit card that says I get 3% off on my gas. I got something else. I have no idea why. When I go to the gas station on Sunday morning, they don't say $2.50 with your credit card, $2.45 without, if you want to pay cash. I have no idea why that discount is out of the system.
A lot of places do that.
Where?
Well, I'm not talking about your gas station, because I don't know, but a lot of restaurants, a lot of bars, a lot of places, and it could be tax avoidance, but I think most of it is because they're getting charged a fee on the credit card every time they swipe it, and they'll put right on the menu, if you pay cash, we will give you a 5% discount or a 10% discount or whatever.
I've never seen it.
I see it all the time now.
Where the hell are you eating?
Well, I mean, you see it on, it's actually, I've seen it where it's actually written on the menu now. Not just like the waiter comes by and tells you like under his breath. It's actually written on the menu. If you pay cash, we'll give you a 5% discount.
Well, I think part of it, and some, if you have this is a part of the law enforcement piece, right? If you have if you pull into the, they used to be all 7-Elevens, but they're not, the gas station plays okay something, whatever, you walk in and there's one guy sitting there on a Sunday morning. I would say that they would say that the 10% or 5% they're paying the credit cards, they'd rather do that than have to have security for this guy and have him handle cash. That somehow the shrinkage.
Well,
they don't trust their employee.
Airlines all do.
And they don't trust somebody to not rob the place once a month, right? if there's cash in there.
That's what the airlines all do. That's what I told a lot of guys that my burrito place across the street from my office. That's what they do now. They don't accept cash. They accept card only, and they're happy with paying that fee because they don't want employees handling the money. They don't want the risk of getting robbed. They don't want the register being short. And so they just card only, and the lines move faster. It's like you tap the card and you're gone. There's no count and change out. There's no digging in your wallet. do I agree with it? I don't really care, I guess. But they, I guess they're eating that fee, and for them it's worth it.
Well, I mean, it probably is, but I'm saying if it gets to the point where, but economically, everywhere you go, if the fee is 3%, it should be 3% off cash, and it's not. I mean, you're saying you're seeing some places, but
some places are starting to do that, but I've only really seen it in the bar and restaurant industry. I've never seen it, you know, at the grocery store, at the gas station. But it does make sense, and I think you'll start to see it more and more.
Another thing is Home Depot. I don't know if you've been watching this, and you're not a Home Depot sort of dude, but
whenever I go to Home Depot, I know that that's a bad day.
Okay. you know, I kind of enjoy going to Home Depot and Menards and those places. Well, if you've gone to the Home Depot the last couple of years, you'll find now that not everything, they're pushing everybody to check out themselves.
Well, that's not just there. That's the convenience stores and grocery stores.
But when people are coming out with 2x4s and stuff with the little thing on the end, and
you can't self check out that stuff, can you?
Well, they're pushing it that way as best they can.
How do you even scan it?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't think you can.
Well, there's a little piece of paper stapled on one end of them. Well,
yeah.
What I'm saying is now all of a sudden, if you look at their earnings this year, I don't know if you watched and listened to their phone call. All they did was whine about the shrinkage and how people were stealing stuff. And now they came out last week and the stock's down a little bit. Not today, but it was down because they said next year the profit is going to be lower because they can't figure out how to deal with the increased stealing. Well, duh. You get rid of all your cash, your checkout people, and people steal more. Are they shocked? I mean, maybe people are just forgetting to scan stuff. They're not even stealing. But I mean, why wouldn't you start that in 3 or 4 stores and leave it that way for a couple of years? And if the minute you saw that you're losing 5% of your stuff walking out not being scanned, you'd get rid of that idea fast.
I agree. The audacity to complain about that is hilarious to
me.
Like, didn't you realize that was the cost of what you're doing? And I assume that was already factored in.
Well,
we know that most people aren't going to steal, but some people will, and this is giving them an easier opportunity to do it. But we think it's worth it because we're not paying cashiers. I thought that was all went into it.
You would think, but now they're whining about it.
Yeah, I'm not listening to those whines at all.
But anyway, you mentioned the marijuana thing, and I'm going to do a preamble to that.
Yeah, we're getting some people that are asking the chief's opinion. You know, marijuana is going to be legal here in Illinois in about two and a half weeks.
I'm going to give the same opinion I give virtually on everything, and I'll say everything is, to me, Maddie, as you know, everything is the same subject. And when we talk about gambling, sports gambling, gambling in the Pepe's Tacos, marijuana, it's a bunch of politicians without doing any homework that I can see, without any plans for something to go wrong, without any thought of taking care of people who might fall to the side because of this.
I don't understand your grounds for thinking that, by the way. And I never side with the politicians, as you know, but it's not like Illinois is the first state. They're like the 20th state. There's plenty of data now and examples that I assume that they've read.
You think they did?
I mean, I would like to hope.
All right, so do you think that they go around to the 7-Elevens on 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning and watch the street guys going in buying 20 lottery tickets?
Well, they obviously don't give a crap about those guys.
Right.
And they're the only ones that buy lottery tickets. I've never bought a lottery ticket in my life.
Go.
And I don't know anyone in their 30s that's ever bought a lottery ticket. That's an older person thing.
Walk out to Van Buren and walk into the little convenience store there. You know, 6 people in line buying every one of those, the ones that we had the person down here and saying they're all rigged. You're going to find minorities getting off the train. You're going to find older people.
I know. I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy. It's not just black people. It's white people. But I mean, they have no
idea. But I challenge you to find someone in their 20s or 30s buying a lottery ticket. I don't think you've ever seen it. I don't think you've ever seen it.
All you got to do is have the number go over a bigger number, and everybody buys them.
I don't think you have ever seen it, and I think it's
going to... We buy them here at the office. You've kicked in when it's over 100 million.
First of all, I never have. And secondly, you guys are older.
No, somebody will run around and say, the thing's $1 billion, how about everybody throwing in a buck?
Next time you go to 7-Eleven, you tell me if you ever see a 25-year-old girl waiting in line to buy a lottery ticket. You'll never see it, and it's going to go away. Because people my age, they understand the odds that you're not going to win, and so they don't do it.
They're still
it's a waste of money.
They're still big money.
I've never bought one.
My point is, now we have sports gambling in Indiana.
There you have a 50-50 chance.
The first month, the first month is they did some millions. The second month they did They did $90 million, okay, gross. So I'm going to say that half of that was straight bets, which is 10%, okay? And the other half is parlay cards, where you probably make, what, 20% on that? Guessing, 20, 25?
Yeah,
the gimmick bets don't pay. Okay, so let's say...
Those are gimmick bets, and they're
right,
stupid
so let's
bets.
Say 30%. So they're going to make gross $4.5 million on the straight bet part, and let's say $8 million on the other. So you're grossing $12 million. You've got a place, you've got an infrastructure. What does the state even make on that? Has anybody done the math? I mean, do they make $500,000? $1 million?
You have to ask a Vegas casino. I assume they're doing well.
But I'm saying
the Vegas casinos do well.
The casinos do well. You give somebody a monopoly who greases your pocket. You get very little money back in taxes, I think. I mean, you might have property taxes or something. You have very little money back in taxes. They never actually give you the number. They just say, oh, we're going to have all this money in taxes to pay for the schools. Wait a minute, did that pay for the schools? Well, no, it didn't really.
So it went to a pool.
It went someplace. But so now you've got essentially a shortfall in the tax part. And I'll guarantee you there's 100 guys over in Indiana that now are broke because they bet on the Bears and the Bears lost. And now they're whatever, their family's fun. I mean, there's a trade-off on this. And I love to gamble. And I don't like to tell people what to do, but I'm saying to not notice that half the waitresses at the Pepe's are losing half their tips on the day before they walk out the front door. There's a cost to this.
There is a cost, and you're right about that, and I agree. I just think that people should be able to do whatever they want.
I don't.
As long as they're not hurting other people.
What I'm saying, but the motivation is, it's not so you and I can have a good time and maybe win some money because we're counting cards or something. The expectation is, it's another way to get money out of your citizenry.
That's 100% correct.
And that part I don't like. Now, the fact that people may enjoy themselves going to the casino, that part I get, because I used to go to the casino all the time. But I'm saying the motivation I don't like. And the pot thing. We don't care how many people are sleeping in the corridors. We got our 10% tax off their gummy bears.
You can be police superintendent and fall asleep in your car drunk and hide. Who cares?
but the business of the series is way up. That part I do know. Right. S&P futures up 750. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.